Blog Talk Radio.
This is the UR Tennis Network. We are the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate tennis enthusiasts who promote our sport relentlessly. We strive continuously to bring news and information for players, parents, coaches, officials, businesses, and anyone else who loves tennis. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis may not be interested in them.
And now, introducing the umpire of today's match, hailing all the way from Burnett, Texas, and representing college coaches everywhere, the only one we could find to call the match, Jason Haynes! The show will be the best 2 out of 3 sets with tiebreakers, and is called Diversity in College Tennis. So turn on your phone and get ready to call in.
Good afternoon. We want to welcome you to Diversity in College Tennis. My name is Jason Haynes. I am the host of the program today. I'm also the Chief Executive Officer of the UR Tennis Network, and we're so excited that you are listening into one of our podcasts or one of our live shows, and so excited to get 2013 started and off in such a positive direction. Those of you that are tennis fans are fully aware that the Australian Open is in full swing. If you love tennis, you'll stay up till the wee hours of the morning to get your tennis fix on. There's nothing like a grand slam at the start of the year that helps tennis fans get motivated to the TV screens, and then that in turn gets them out to the court. And we've had a good run of it so far. I wanted to let you know that there's a group of college players that are over there. We're going to talk about them in a little bit. The ITA has released some new rules in regards to their doubles play in the spring of 2013. We're going to talk about that. And then also the NCAA has released some new recruiting rules that we're going to talk about and see how that affects tennis and proceed from there. So the call-in number today, 714-583-6853, 714-583-6853. I was hoping to have Coach Paul Scarpa on the show today. I reached out to him several times and not quite sure if he's going to make it in today. I hope he does. And if he does, we'll accommodate that guest. And as we move through this, and then next week we have Coach Alan Fox. He'll be coming on the air, and we'll talk some college tennis stories with him as well. As always, each week I try to start my show by telling a very special person out there hello. That would be my mom, Stella Haynes. She was one of the first listeners to the show. There were only two that day, the radio producer and my mom, and actually goes down in history as the first caller into the show as well, with a good question, if I remember correctly. Now, with the numbers in from last year, we had over 40,000 listens to the network, and we're so excited about what's happening for us in the year 2013. We'll be moving forward with this idea and expanding on some ideas with the help of many people out there in the tennis world. We're so thankful to be where we are and so grateful, and look forward to the many blessings that are in store for us in the future as we move through this. I want to remind you that we do have other shows on the network. Monday morning at 11 o'clock Central Time, we have Parenting Aces with Lisa Stone. Tuesday is my show, Diversity in College Tennis, which happens at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time. On Wednesday, we have American Tennis with Chuck Creasy. That's 11 o'clock Central Standard Time. Thursday is the Bruce Lipka Show. That happens at 11 o'clock Central Standard Time. Friday is the Tennis Authority with Miss Natalie Fox. And that happens at 12 o'clock Central Standard Time. On Saturdays, we have a couple of shows. We have Minority Tennis with Alex Chan, and that runs on Saturday. And then we also have Women Ruling the Court with Alyssa Cohan. That happens on Saturday as well. And then Sunday evening, we finish off the week with We Coach Tennis, and that's hosted by Mr. J.P. Weber. You can usually catch that about 5 o'clock Central Standard Time on Sunday evenings. So we try each week to give you a lot of different views and personalities as we go through this and let you know what's current in a lot of different areas in the tennis world. And that's what we're trying to do here at the network, is to provide you with a whole area of tennis that is covered each week, and you can get your fix. Because as a tennis fan, as a passionate tennis fan in this, I realize that I like tennis. I like to get tennis information, and I like to know what's going on and what's happening all across it, whether it be tennis industry, what's happening with the pro players, the amateur level, juniors, college. It doesn't really matter. Tennis is a great lifetime sport, and I love keeping up with it and letting people know what I see and what's happening and what's going on. So, very excited about that opportunity to get that out to you through the network, and we'll continue on. In January here, we're going to try to expand and give you more shows on different days. We know that tennis can be talked about, and we've proven that, and we look on to 2013 as a year in which we get even more involved and really try to do some positive things for our sport. Let's talk some news, some college tennis news. As many of you know, college tennis season has started. The 2013 run for the championships is on. Division I's, some of them started school last week, most of them this week, and have already started playing matches. Some traveled down to Florida to play where the weather is nice and sunny, and some played indoors. And wanted to talk to you about those college players that are out there on the pro tour currently. These are the people that are good for the American college tennis system. These are the players that have gone through the system and have proceeded forward to the professional level, maturing at a much later date, and then having some success out there on the tour. And as you go through this, the men's portion of these draws are very heavily favored with college tennis players, and then the women's draw much smaller, and obviously need to do more on the women's side here to get them into the pro tour so that we attract better players into the American college system and make it a viable alternative here. So let's start with the 2013 Australian Open. These are the men's college players, and I got this off the itatennis.com website, and you can go there and they get the same information. But on the men's singles side, Kevin Anderson from Illinois, he won his first round. Benjamin Becker from Baylor, he won his first round. Benjamin is also from Germany, and Kevin from South Africa. Arnaud Brugué-Davy, I probably butchered that name, from Tulsa, he lost his first round to Feliciano Lopez, and many of you probably heard of Feliciano. Samdev Devaraman from Virginia, an Indian, and we all know that the Indians are much roiled in their Davis Cup battle right now. He won his against Bjorn Fowl of Germany, 6-3, 6-2, 6-3. Steve Johnson lost to Nicolas Almagro, and it was quite a battle. It did actually go five sets with Steve losing 6-2 in the fifth. And actually, he is from the U.S. of A. Michael Russell, also from the U.S. of A, held in representing the University of Miami. He lost to Thomas Berdych in the first round. Jesse Levine, an American college player, but now Canadian, if you kept up with that. He defeated Tommy Robredo in the first round. Rajiv Ram from Illinois, an American, he defeated Guillermo Garcia Lopez from Spain in the first round. John Patrick Smith, one of Australia's young hopefuls, lost to Joao Sousa, and he's from Portugal, I believe, in the first round. And Ryan Williams, remember we had Grandpa on the air with this, Mike DePalmer. Very excited about this young man, but he unfortunately lost to Florian Mayer, 25th seed, and that was a five-set battle in the first round over there. So women's singles, only one representative, and she hails from Australia. She plays out at the University of Cal, and that's Bohana Bobasic. She lost first round to Agni and Radwanska from Poland, and not a bad loss there, 7-5, 6-0. So she did give her a good run for her money there in the first round. Doubles draws on the men's side, and I'm not going to list them all out, but I'll throw out some of the names of the schools that are represented there. Anyway, I will throw out these names, Bob and Mike Bryan. The Bryan brothers do an outstanding job there of representing what college tennis can do for you. They do an outstanding job of representing the United States of America. And the family itself is just outstanding for tennis. You've got them from Stanford. Then you have people that are representing schools such as Tennessee, Baylor, USC, Illinois, Gustavus Adolphus with Eric Boderek. Then you have Baylor again, Virginia Commonwealth, LSU. Let's see here, UCLA, Pepperdine, Ole Miss, North Carolina. Those are all schools that are represented the U.S. college system over there in Australia. On the women's doubles side, we've got Florida, William & Mary, Cal, UCLA, Florida, and Georgia Tech. Those are all, and UCLA, all colleges that are being represented over in the Australian Open in the 2013. And hopefully, as we go through this, we get some good results. You know, John Isner had to pull out with a knee injury. He was the American male hopeful on that side in regard to being a high-seeded player and getting a chance to break through, but had to pull out because of a knee injury, and we were sorry to hear about that. Now, as we move away from my chance to talk a little bit about professional tennis, which I don't get a chance to talk about, but about four times out of the year, in regards to when these players play the Grand Slams, I will let you know that you know, in what we're doing here, we tended to become a little more advocates of certain areas, and it just seems to me like when you look at a draw 128 size on the Australian Open, that the American college system should be more represented than what it was. And I think you know, at least maybe half of the draw connected to the American college system, should be a goal that the USTA and the ITA and the colleges and universities want to have happen. They want to attract the best players. They want it to be somewhat of a minor league system. I mean, and so if it becomes part of the system, then you would create an environment where a tier of players that want success and wants an education, maybe mature just a little bit later, can go through and see what happens. And, you know, back in the glory days of the American college system, the late 70s, early 80s, you know, we had players from all over the U.S. that had a chance to play pro tennis, and now it just seems like when you read off a name like that, that your chance is so small. And perhaps we need to open the door instead of close it. I mean, we've got the American system knocking and saying, hey, you know what, we're broken, we need some help. Would somebody out there come forth and represent us and get us back on track and put out the players that we know we're capable of putting out there? And you know, as soon as you realize that, then you've got to realize that, and I say it all the time, the community college system is the key in all this. Well, what better way to grow American tennis than have the community in the United States embrace it? I mean, if every community college system out there had one man and one woman's team, given the current nature, that's 16 athletes, and with the cost relative to what it is to other sports, it's the most cost beneficial long term when you look at alumni fundraising and giving back. You get these communities involved in tennis, a lifetime sport, that it seems to me like you would grow, and you would start a movement in which people would want to get involved in. Local vendors would want to come out to the courts and get involved. Local businesses would want their signs up on the courts. They would want these kids in these programs to come back to the communities and give and allow for scholarships to be handed out to local kids and start to develop a relationship there. Community college tennis promotes the local high school kids. The local high school kids represent the community. So the more communities, the more at the local community college system, it just seems to me like you would have a better relationship. And then from there, you can build regional sites. You know, your university system is set up there where a community college graduate could graduate to a directional or a regional university, in which that system there is allowed to, you know, complete the college education, to get most of the college education paid for. And then from there, move these better players up into better regional complexes, and then have the regional complexes compete on a national level. And as they do, and they deregulate the market, so to speak, in other words, you do put a limit here on the number of internationals, then you spread the American wealth, and more American kids want to play American college tennis. I mean, it just seems pretty simple when you think about it, and that's boys and girls. Being a female college tennis coach for about 20 years, I realized that, you know, these male college coaches have it all wrong in their approach. If they would just embrace what's happening on the Title IX side for the American woman. In other words, you know, we've given them 8 opportunities here to get into the American college system free of charge. And we've assigned some of our best recruiters in America to get these 8 scholarships filled at these universities, hopefully promoting the American woman and what she's about and who she represents. And we're going to look to her first, and then we're going to go international after that, getting some of the best prospects for American citizens that we can find. And bringing them into the system and letting them choose freedom to choose their education. And let's let them then decide. And And then from the national system, have them move on to pros. You can actually set up a circuit on top of that, on top of the college circuit, that would promote individualized play, so that these young men, young women that have the ego, you could feed that ego a little bit here and give them a chance to win some tournaments on the individual level, and then still contribute to the college team and its atmosphere. You could get these players more recognition inside their own neighborhoods, inside their own streets, and get people attached. Because, you know, in tennis, we're lasting. You know, tennis gets really exciting from 16, and with Federer and Serena up at 31, that's 15 years that you can watch a tennis player. And if you have a local connection to him, you're more likely to follow them as they travel through it. However, if you don't ever see that player and he travels to Fiji all the time to play tournaments, you'll never get a real connection to them locally. So, you know, just like to encourage people that are out there that can help. And in my opinion, it streams from the energy sector, the medical science field, pharmaceutical industries. You know, these fields offer a tremendous amount of wealth in the American system, and it's an easy way for them to invest back into America, get some community college tennis going. Start getting some people that will give back to your companies and to these educational systems and thank you for the reward that has been given to them. So, you know, and so we go with that idea, and then we move over into what happened over Christmas break, and then we had a situation where tennis gets dumbed down by the ITA. We couldn't do it with the NCAA. We raised such a fuss in the tennis world that we had it kind of swept under the rug and not talked about for a while. It moved quietly about as a pinball, and knew it was going to come back and surface. So here's what they did. At the ITA convention, those of you that are interested in this, the dumbing down of college tennis continues. Doubles, and this is where they get it. They hit it hard in the doubles. We can't figure out that doubles is important to American society and to the American college and professional experience. I mean, we've watched players that have singled themselves out to just be singles players, and we're not getting much in the form of domination on the American side. I think it's the more athletic player that can play doubles and singles and get the benefits out of those match experiences are the ones that we're after, not these guys. But anyway, so here's what they did. 2013 ITA Division I only rule changes, and we'll see about that. You know, because whatever Division I does, everybody else needs to do, because they know what's right for tennis, those Division I people. So here's what we've got in doubles. In dual matches, the doubles will be stopped when the doubles point has been won. So, and what this means is you got three doubles matches out there. You got court one, they win 8-0. Court two wins 8-1. Court three, wherever you're at, don't finish tennis. We got to stop, and we got to move on to the singles here. We only have 10 to 15 minutes left. We may have 30 minutes, who knows, but we want to stop tennis, cut it off, don't play anymore, put the balls down, boys, girls, put the rackets down. We've got to move on to singles. Number two, from January 1 through the ITA National Team Indoor Championships, unless both coaches agree otherwise, all non-conference dual matches will use no ad scoring for the doubles only, and will play the doubles tiebreak at 7-7. Now, this is critical because this is goes back to the NCAA meetings that they had. Remember, the ITA wasn't personally involved in these meetings. That was what we got out of those meetings. However, David Benjamin was listed as being a part of those meetings, okay? So the NCAA cannot get it passed because there's such a fuss raised by Robert Van Overbeek, who we had on the show. Such a fuss is raised. Do not change doubles. How dare you? How dare you? ITA in the corner of the room says, well, maybe there's a different way here. Maybe we can change the doubles and get it set up to where the rule changes you want just seem a lot more logical. And think about it like this. That second rule here is critical in that thought. From January 1st through the ITA National Team Indoor Championships, all non-conference dual matches, you see, and that's before it was at conference where this was going to happen, where they were going to shorten the doubles. So now it makes the NCAA rule seem more significant. Well, we'll just piggyback it on top of the ITA rule here, and we'll get it taken care of. It'll be real simple. We'll shorten doubles. We'll shorten the time frame and all this, and we'll see if we can kind of revolutionize tennis by subtraction, which I'm not a big fan of. This addition by subtraction logic that seems to be ruling in the tennis world just doesn't make a lot of sense to me, and I don't know which authoritative figures are out there that are getting the math done in this, but they need to go back to school and demand a refund, because addition by subtraction doesn't even work in space. So, all right, now, no ad scoring. I'm not entirely opposed to no ad scoring. You know, in some senses, it requires a little more competitive atmosphere. 3-3, got 1 point, one chance. Either get it or you don't. But sometimes in the deuce situation, where particularly in the women's tennis, when they're serving, those games could travel on and on and on and on. And this is a situation where, you know what, one double fault, we're done. One winner through the middle of the court, we're done. I'm not entirely opposed to that. You know, I'm not real sure, and granted, statistics may prove otherwise here, but what the benefit is to playing the doubles tiebreaker at 7-7 instead of 8-8, you know. Let's lose some of the dramatics that can be associated when we get to 7-7 and somebody might win 9-7. We just gave them a chance to let it play out instead of trying to shorten it. Medical timeout, and these are men's rules only. Interesting. If a player requests a medical timeout, he will be allowed 3 minutes combined for both evaluation and treatment. He will also receive a point penalty. However, this point penalty will not be part of the code violation point penalty system. Excuse me. Seems a little odd that they got men's medical timeouts and women's medical timeouts. Women's, here it is, Division I women may have 1 3-minute bathroom break on the changeover in addition to the 90-second changeover or 2-minute set break, allowing the total stoppage time of 4.5 minutes or 5 minutes on a set break. Returning late from this break will result in time violations, warning, point, etc. Why do the men get different toilet break rules than the women? And why is it that the men are charged a point penalty, but the women aren't? I mean, it's a point penalty if you have to go to the restroom in men's tennis, and if you go in women's tennis, it's not a point penalty. That seems like kind of a weird guideline. That's ITA. Now, remember, they're the brainchild of college tennis. And then the other one here, which is, there's like a universal toilet break rule, and this one's both sides, I guess. If a Division I player asks to use the bathroom break other than on a changeover or set break, it will be his or her one medical timeout. The men will also receive a point penalty. It will be timed like other bathroom breaks, and lateness will result in time violation. This includes a toilet visit requested at the end of the warm-up. Seems a little like micromanagement. We've gotten into the bathroom breaks. You know, I agree. I mean, you know, some of these stalling tactics and things like that, that gets a little old. You know, but if I got to go to the bathroom, I got to go to the bathroom. Abuse. Abuse of the policy, and that goes to the coach. Shouldn't the coach say, you know what, my player is just not doing the right thing, and we're going to stop this. But again, the coach probably just sits there with his hands in his pockets hoping he can win the match because he's got this stall tactic on, and he learned that from, I don't know, basketball or football, and that seems to work over there instead of just playing it out. It'll come back one way or the other. One way or the other, it always gets you on the tennis court. That's for sure. Call-in number today, 714-583-6853, 714-583-6853. Looking for Coach Paul Scarpa. He could call in at any moment. He's the head coach there at Furman University, 45 years waiting for him. Now, something else that came across my news desk and wanted to share it with you, and I try to scour the internet for college tennis news. So but the NCAA has decided to come across with some sweeping changes to their book, and could be called somewhat of a recruiting revolution. You got to remember, most of these rules are driven by basketball coaches and others. I really wish that the ITA and the tennis world would rule and govern themselves instead of allowing other sports to dictate what they do in their sport. Our sport is so much more individual and yet so much more team than any of the others. And our rules, if we were given a chance to write the rules, would be entirely different than the way they're set up now, and I think they would be much more likable through the other sports. Tennis people are able somehow or the other, and I found this so interesting, we're able to govern ourselves. You know, and think about that. I mean, on a college tennis match, a league match, or otherwise, we don't have umpires, so we have to govern ourselves with the rules. We have to have a knowledge of it, and we go from there. And yet the other sports, they can't do that. Basketball tries, football tries, but you can't understand all the rules and have eyes on all the players at one time. In tennis, it's me versus you and my knowledge of the rules and then else. So here's what we did, or what they did with the NCAA. And they're meeting this Sunday afternoon over in Grapevine, Texas, to consider some of the proposals. And I'm going to lay them out here for you. And if we get a caller that calls in, we'll talk about them. If we get somebody else, get Coach Scarpa, we'll talk to him. But you as college tennis fans need to know how the recruiting wars will now play themselves out. And here it goes. Number 2-1, they'll establish the commitments that guide the underlying operating bylaws. This includes a commitment to fair competition, which acknowledges that variability will exist among members in advantages, including facilities, geographic location, resources, and that such variability should not be a justification for future legislation. Now, they're going to open up the gates here, and what they're going to say is that the gates... you can do whatever you want to in regards to facilities, maximizing your location, your resources. Get after it. That's what makes you special. And we don't want to hear any more complaints about it. You know, sorry you're in Northwest Alaska State, and thank the good Lord above you're in Pepperdine. You're going to get a lot better tennis player at Pepperdine than you are in Northwest Alaska State. 11-2 would eliminate the rules defining recruiting coordination functions that must be performed only by a head or assistant coach. In other words, you've got volunteer assistant coaches and things of that nature on your campus with your team. They will now be allowed to coordinate recruiting as well as the head or the assistant coach. 11-3B would prohibit the live scouting of future opponents except in limited circumstances. Now, this isn't a bad one. Not at all. They'll get to scout future opponents all the time. I think that's a great one. 11-4 would remove limits on the number of coaches who can recruit off campus at any one time, the so-called baton rule. Well, that's another good one there. I think that to be able to pass a recruit around without having to worry about passing the recruit around and having him around the number of coaches at once and players and administrators and things like that is always to an advantage. It is a team atmosphere, of course, at the college athletic world, so I think that that's a definite good one. 12-1 would establish a uniform definition of actual and necessary expenses to include meals, lodging, transportation, and other competition-related expenses. Well, this is just an increase in expense money. And we know that that expense money is entertainment money, and we know that it will allow college recruiting to get even more elaborate in certain areas and more basic in others. And I don't think anything's wrong with it. 12-2, allow the calculation of actual and necessary expenses to be based on the total over a calendar year instead of an event-by-event basis. The working group recommended the calculation change for both prospective and enrolled athletes. More expense money. 12-3 would allow an athlete to receive $300 more than actual and necessary expenses, provided the expenses come from an otherwise permissible source. More expense money. It's more expensive. College recruiting is more expensive nowadays. You got to understand that. We got to fly kids in. We got to pay for this, got to pay for that. We need more money to spend on these athletes. They can't decide without us spending money on these athletes. How did they used to do it? 12-4, permit individuals to receive actual and necessary competition-related expenses from outside sponsors, so long as the person is not an agent, booster, or representative of a professional sports organization. Well, we can definitely tell basketball and football in this one. Competition-related expenses from outside sponsors. Competition-related expenses, coaching, boot camps, tournaments, hotels, meals, that sort of thing, more expense money. 12-6, allow athletes and prospects to receive actual and necessary expenses for training, coaching, health insurance, etc., from a governmental entity. How about that? More expense money. That was 6 expense money related changes within the NCAA coming your way, tennis world, and excited that they decided to include tennis in this. I think so far so good for tennis. More expense money to spend on these highly educated athletes, getting them to come to your university for tennis. 13-2. Allow off-campus contact with recruits beginning the first day of the junior year in high school and communication with recruits on or after July 1st after the completion of the recruit's sophomore year in high school. So they're going to get to contact the athletes earlier. I think this is good. They're not going to have to wait as long. You can get more involved in the recruiting process earlier. It's a chance to look at more athletes and their growth. 13-3, eliminate restrictions on methods and modes of communications. They're going to open the floodgates on texting, on Facebook messaging, on smoke signals, on hot air balloon rides, on telephone calls, emails, as many as they want, as often as they want, when they want, how they want. That should be very interesting. 13.4, eliminate the requirement that institutions provide materials such as a banned drug list and academic progress rate data to recruits. They don't want you to know that they have banned drugs, and they don't want you to know that they're academically progressive. Interesting. 13.5A, eliminate restrictions on sending print recruiting materials to recruits. So now they're going to use the U.S. Postal System. This may help us recover to send out more mail there. We'll give the mail people jobs. Outstanding. 13.7, eliminate restrictions on publicity such as press conferences for when a high-profile athlete signs with the program. Once a prospective athlete has signed a national letter of intent or written offer of financial aid or admission. In other words, make it a big deal. Make it a big deal that kids decided to sign with your school. I like it. I always think it is a big deal. Deregulate camps and clinics employment rules related to both recruits and current athletes. Senior football prospects would be allowed to participate in camps and clinics. Another outstanding rule change. 14.1, eliminate academic regulations that are covered elsewhere and directly supported by institutional academic policy. Oh, that's an interesting one. I'm going to go after the academics. 16.1, which would allow institutions, conferences, or the NCAA National Office to provide and award athletes any time after initial full-time enrollment. 16.2, allow conferences, an institution, the U.S. Olympic Committee, the national governing body, or the awarding agency to provide actual and necessary expenses for an athlete to receive a non-institutional award or recognition for athletics or academic accomplishments. Expenses would also be provided for parents, legal guardians, a spouse, or other relatives as well. Kid gets an award, let him go. Let the school pay for it. It was a school that got him the award. That seems like a pretty logical thing to do. You can call in at 714-583-6853, 714-583-6853. We're talking about the NCAA rules that are coming about, the changes that are going to happen on the recruiting side of this. These are rules that were probably adopted by football and basketball coaches, but they'll affect the tennis world. So I'm going to play a quick commercial, and then I'll be right back with more of those rules.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Welcome back to Diversity in College Tennis. I am Jason Haynes, the host of the program. We are waiting for Coach Paul Scarpa to call in today. In the meantime, we are talking about the college tennis news that's out there. And we're talking about NCAA rules. A couple other things I wanted to get to before we get back to those NCAA rules as we go through this. I wanted to let you know of a couple of things that I came across in the college tennis world. And the first one here is a coach by the name of Y. Joe Williams. Coached the men's and women's tennis team at now Ashford University from 1997 to 2002. He's going to be inducted into the school's Athletics Hall of Fame this weekend. He coached the men's team and tripled their number of dual matches victories and led the women's team to an 8-win season in his second year. He also coached NAIA regional singles and doubles champions during his tenure. Good to hear that Mr. Y. Joe Williams there is being honored for that. Another interesting bit of news that came across my desk was about the Texas A&M Aggies. They were in Houston this last weekend playing at the Rice Met Indoor Tennis Tournament held at the Downtown Club at the Met in Houston. The singles championship was a Junior Orr. He of Texas A&M, he defeated TCU's Nick Chapel 6-3-6, 6-4, 6-4, and Orr and Minavi defeated the TCU duo of Arnold Docks and Orlando Cipriano 8-4 to win the doubles crown. Sorry, oosh. It's a lot of information going very fast with a lot of international names. I don't know if you caught that. Junior Ore, Azad Minavi, Nick Chappell, Arnold Docks, Orlando Cipriano. Those don't roll off the tongue, especially this Texas tongue. Although Minavi is a sophomore from Houston, so that's good to see. Texas A&M is supposed to be pretty good this year. Women, I hear. Men, we'll wait and see, I guess. Another one that came out, Stanford. Stanford men set for another run at NCAA tennis honors. They came out and they were ranked number 10 in the ITA national poll. And it's just a quick article about what's happening there. They finished third in the Pac-12 last year, 5-2, and reached a 20-win plateau for the fourth consecutive year. Finished number 9. They lost Bradley Fawn and Ryan Thatcher. And, questions about how they're going to be replaced. So you can go to paloaltoonline.com and find that article there. Again, that's Stanford men set for another run at NCAA Tennis Honors. You know, and I wish them best of luck. The Cardinal hold a place in my heart. For me, it was a good mentor program and really let me know what college tennis is about on the NCAA Division I level, and gave a small kid from Texas hopes that one day he might be out somewhere doing that. So I want to wish them the best of luck. All right, so let's get back to some of these rules. And again, if you want to call in and talk tennis today, 714-583-6853. Don't be bashful. I'd love to go to bat with you and see what you can do. Pick my brain about college tennis, about tennis in general, and we'll see what we can come up with here. Let's see here. Another rule change. They have to define, would allow institutions to provide reasonable entertainment in conjunction with competition or practice. You know, we talked about this at the University of Georgia. One of their football coaches got into a bit of a quandary over there because he helped an athlete see a tennis match and paid for it out of his pocket. It was like $8, I think it was, or maybe 25 total. I don't remember exactly. And somebody reported him. I mean, he took one of their athletes to another event on the Georgia campus and helped the family get in and watch. And, you know, I kind of thought, well, that's what I think recruiting should be. You know, if he had taken him to the zoo and paid for him to ride the roller coaster or whatever there, that would be different. But to be on campus there at Georgia and then to get caught because he bought a ticket into a tennis match just seemed kind of reasonable. What this rule does is it gets rid of that. On campus and see a sporting event that maybe the family would be interested in attending, go ahead. You can do that now. That's a good one. Lots of expenses in all of this, seems like. Allow institutions and conferences of the NCAA to pay for other academic support, career counseling, or personal development services that support the success of the athlete. Let the athletics department pay for the success of the athlete. Let them hire tutors. Let them hire counselors, career counselors, school counselors. That's a good one. I like it. Here's one. Allow institutions to our conferences or the NCAA to pay for medical and related expenses for a student athlete. That's a good one. Kid gets injured participating in practice or traveling or playing, the school should help pay for that expense. I think that's right. Another one, which allows schools to provide actual and necessary expenses to athletes representing the institution in practice and competition, including expenses for activities travel that are incidental to practice and competition, as well as non-competitive events like goodwill tours and media appearances. Allow athletes to receive actual and necessary expenses and reasonable benefits associated with a national team practice and competition. The proposal would also allow institutions to pay for any number of national team trials and championship events. You got some good athletes, and they want to go try out for the American All-Star team, the Texas All-Star team, whatever it is. And the school wants them to go, wants them to wear the jersey, wants them to wear the name. Let them go. Let them participate. Let them get that name out there. You know, Johnny Bag of Donuts representing Northwest Texas State, playing for the Texas All-Stars. Pretty good feeling. Playing for the U.S. All-Stars, an even better feeling. Definitely the way we want this to move. We're moving in a direction here with the NCAA and with the ITA. Some of it's good, some of it's not so good. Those rule changes for the doubles, I hope you can tell that we're really not interested in shorting the doubles format, that's for sure. And we're interested in it so much that we're going to try here in the spring here in Texas with the UR Tennis Network. We're going to try to put on the proposed format from Mike DePalmer, which is you put all the dual matches on at once. In other words, six singles matches and three doubles matches will go on court at the same time. They'll play two sets and two out of three sets and a tiebreaker decided for the third. We're going to time it, and we're just going to show people that you can get this done differently, and it can be more exciting than the way it currently is. Just looking at it the wrong way, and maybe the perspective you have on college tennis needs to be changed. I mean, you've had it a certain way for this long, and look at the direction you're going. Isn't it time to say, whoa, I really don't want to continue to move that way and be that way? And time to kind of regroup and go back a different avenue. And I think that's what's given here is a chance to do something like that. And so we're going to take that chance. We're going to show you out there in the college tennis world that there are alternatives. You just need to kind of pilot program them out and see if it'll work. Don't be so pigeonholed into an area that you can't try new things to make events more exciting. Exhibitions, in other words, you know. More tennis equals just that, more tennis. And that's what we're after with the UR Tennis Network, more tennis. Give us more tennis coverage. Give us more tennis stories. Give us more tennis results. More tennis, definitely. Now for the NCAA, you know, and this is what's interesting, and I'll say it here, and I've said it privately as well. The NCAA needs to be careful with the rules that they're putting out there. They need to be coach-friendly. They need to be sport-friendly because the way the super conferences are positioning themselves inside the American borders here, the Pac-16, the SEC, the Big 12, the Big 16, the Big East, the ACC, those conferences are setting themselves up to operate without heavy regulation from the NCAA, and they don't need it. They've shown that with college football. We don't really need NCAA guidelines here. We can create our own schedule. We can create our own bowl format, and we can outdo anything that you can come up with. So you need to pay attention to what we're doing. And perhaps this situation where the NCAA needs to move their carrot and put it back in front of the horse in a different perspective. So I hope that the NCAA, and it just doesn't stop with, you know, football and basketball. It relates to the other sports as well. And I think that the individual coaches out there, the golfs, the tennis, the swimming, the track and the field, they need to get together and realize that when they put all of their athletes together, they have a greater population inside the athletic department than the football or the basketball teams. And they should be demanding the rule changes and the things that they need necessary for their sports. And they should be reflected within the NCAA. Give the governing back to the coaches, not by an organization, and let them determine what's good and bad for each individual sport. I think that's a healthy way to go. So we'll move along. College tennis will put these rule changes in. We'll follow them. We'll let you know what's happening with the ITA as we go on through this, what the coaches think of these rule changes, what they want to see further change, what they'd like to see rescinded. So we'll do that. We're glad to be a part of that. Next week, we've got Coach Alan Fox on the show. Coach Fox is a famous coach from Pepperdine University. Hope to get some good stories there on what's been happening in his tennis world. We'll also come back and hopefully give you some good college results on the Australian Open. I want to remind you that that's going on weeknights now into the wee hours of the morning, 3 or 4 a.m. Make sure you've got your DVR program to catch that. I want to remind you that tomorrow we have a podcasted live broadcast with American Tennis with Chuck Creasy. Comes on 11 o'clock Central Standard Time, and then Thursday's the Bruce Lipka Show. Bruce had Todd Martin on his program last week, just a great show. And, you know, I want to congratulate Bruce as he keeps going through this and getting more courage to get more people on his show. He does a great job interviewing those guests, and so excited he's with the network. And then Friday is Miss Natalie Shaleen. Natalie does an outstanding job of finding the small businesses out there that need some help with the tennis in the tennis world, and she provides them that opportunity. She's just a joy to listen to. I'm so glad she's associated with the network as well. So we'll be back here next Tuesday at 2 o'clock and look forward to having you participate as we go along through this. And please feel free to participate in our other shows. They're all call-in shows. They all can support live participation, even through the Skype level. So let me play this commercial, and we'll get you out of here.
This is Jason Haynes, the UR Tennis Network's Chief Executive Officer. Over the last 14 months, we have undergone a lot of changes here at the UR Tennis Network, and the Nike Tennis Camps have been one of our strongest supporters. They have had a very successful 2012 summer camp season and now are planning for 2013. We would like to thank them for allowing us to be an advertising avenue for their tennis camps. As we leave the summer, we want to encourage you to check out www.ussportcamps.com and start planning your next Nike camp experience. They have locations all over the U.S. for both adults and juniors. The Nike camps are offered in other sports such as golf, volleyball, soccer, swimming, softball, running, water polo, lacrosse, and field hockey. We want to encourage you to consider the Nike camp experience for your tennis needs. These camps are run by successful tennis coaches and offer a fun camp involvement where you learn new skills and make new friends. Be sure to check them out at www.ussportcamps.com or call them at 1-800-NIKE-CAMP and take your game to the next level.
Well, that's all I got today, ladies and gentlemen. Apologize that Coach Scarpa didn't make it into the show today. We'll have Coach Alan Fox on next week, and we'll just continue on through this, bringing you a diverse list of college coaches out there trying to get their viewpoints about college tennis and what's going on in American tennis as well. Keep your heads up. American tennis is going to win out in all this. We are going to make the American college experience better. Just looking forward to keeping you involved. So please come back next week, 2 o'clock Central Standard Time. Coach Alan Fox. Go out and play some tennis. Watch some tennis, hit some tennis balls today if you can. And look forward to having you back here again next week. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Opinions stated by various contributors to UR10's radio and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR10's network. Visitors are urged to use their own discernment to draw their own conclusions. All information, products, services, and use of this website is for personal use only. UR10's radio does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of the information contained within the website. Any services or products provided by UR10's radio and its hosts or contributors should be used solely for entertainment and enjoyment. We emphasize the importance of keeping an open mind and not construing the data, products, and/or services as factual.